Rack up the deals on everything summer at Nordstrom Rack and get brands you love up to 60% off. Vince, Kate Spade New York, Steve Madden, Madewell, Nike, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Just in dresses, tops, shorts, sandals, sneakers, denim, luxury bags, and sunglasses. Rack up the deals today and save up to 60% on summer at your Nordstrom Rack store.
If you own a business or work for one that you'd like to help grow, you owe it to yourself to learn more about the power of promotional marketing. Market research shows that promotional marketing items, used properly, have the lowest cost per impression of any marketing media, lower than TV, radio, or internet advertising. By strategically redirecting a portion of your marketing resources, you can use the power of promotional marketing to break through the clutter and directly target your highest value sales prospects. More importantly, promotional products can help you both retain your current customers and increase your revenue per customer. Contact friend of the show, Tim O'Neill, tim@imagemasters.com, to schedule a free phone consultation to see if promotional marketing strategies have a place in your marketing mix. Your company is already spending the money on marketing. Why not tap into Tim's 25 years of experience as a marketing communications professional to see if that investment could be producing better returns? Image Masters, smarter marketing, proven results.
Top of the second period here on the Puck Podcast. And Doug, we now know what the playoff matchups are following the Boston Bruins Ottawa Senators game on Sunday. Ottawa with the 4-2 win over Boston. So as a result, the Senators claim the number 7 seed. They knock the New York Islanders to the number 8 seed. Boston obviously does not win the Northeast Division title. That honor goes to the Montreal Canadiens, who capture the number 2 seed. That means they will play Ottawa in the first round, and the Boston Bruins drop down to the number 4 seed. They'll take on 5th seeded Toronto in the first round of the playoffs. And the matchup that was not affected at all by tonight's game was the Capitals taking on the Rangers, Washington being the 3 seed as the champions of the Southeast, and New York, the 6th seed. So let's go ahead and start with the East, and let's start at the very top, where we have the top seed, the Pittsburgh Penguins, taking on the 8th seed, the New York Islanders. And a great season for the Islanders, happy to get in, but you got to believe, not so happy to have to face the Pittsburgh Penguins in the opening round. We still don't know the status of Sidney Crosby. Will he be available for the first round? Will he be available for the first game? So on and so forth. He did return to practice, as we mentioned, in the first period in the ER report. Back practicing, but not cleared by the doctors yet. So we'll have to wait and see. Even worst case scenario, Doug, without Sidney Crosby, still seems like the Penguins by far have the superior firepower. And do the New York Islanders have enough to keep up with the Pittsburgh Penguins at all?
No.
Next game.
Yes. No, let's first I want to thank our listeners that have joined us on Google Plus as we are recording this show live on Google Plus. And I want to thank those of you that have taken the time to join us over there and tell you that two things. One, please mute your microphones during this segment. And two, we will be taking questions from you guys immediately after the second period. So stick around after that. That will not be broadcast on the podcast, but we are recording this for the podcast. As we do this, no, the Islanders don't have the firepower to take on a healthy Penguins team or even a remotely healthy Penguins team. The only chance that they have is if Yevgeny Nabokov is out of his mind, hot in net, and can steal some wins for them, and they can find a way to get into Pittsburgh's heads. They need to steal at least one of those first two games, I think, to put some pressure on Pittsburgh, make them think there's reason to worry. Because if I was Pittsburgh, I wouldn't even think about starting Sidney Crosby until the second round. Let him heal completely and get back as much rest as possible before he's back in the lineup. You don't need him against the New York Islanders. You're not going to need him in this first round. And if you do, then maybe you bring him back in game 5, 6, or 7 if those are played. But I really think the Penguins without Sidney Crosby still have more than enough to take care of the Islanders. Good season for New York. Not a good ending, I don't think.
Yeah, and for the record, the season series went to Pittsburgh. Excuse me. The Penguins and Islanders met 5 times, with Pittsburgh winning 4 of the 5 games. Again, I think the Islanders certainly happy to be in the playoffs. I guess you could say they're dangerous in that they have nothing to lose. But in the end, yeah, it's hard to envision a scenario where the Islanders will somehow knock off the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, look at Pittsburgh down the stretch. Crosby was out. James Neal was out. Paul Martin was out. Chris Letang had missed some time. Evgeny Malkin had the sunburn, and yet they were still winning games. So now that they're at least healthy, maybe minus Crosby, but everyone else is back. Paul Martin back ahead of schedule. Again, hard to envision a scenario where the Penguins don't win this one relatively easy. Prediction time, Doug. Your thoughts on how long it will take for the Pittsburgh Penguins to win this series?
You can count them on one hand, but you'll need all digits. Five games for the Pittsburgh Penguins. I'm going to go get some water while you recap the next one, as I'm out of water here. But I got the Penguins over Islanders of five. I do think New York will get one, probably game three, game four. But they don't have enough to extend this series very far.
I'm going to say it's a clean sweep. I hope I'm wrong. I would like it. You know, when you get into the playoffs, especially when you haven't been there for a while, to get swept, as we saw Columbus do a few years back. I remember it was the first time they had ever gotten in. A lot of excitement over seeing playoff hockey for the first time in Columbus and as a Blue Jackets fan. And they got swept by Detroit. And it was almost like, wow, that really sucked. So I hope that doesn't happen to the Islanders. I hope it doesn't happen to their fans. I hope if they do get a win, it will be on home ice so they can at least see that. But I just can't see the Islanders being competitive enough to win more than a game. They may take a game, but in the end, I'm going to go ahead and predict a clean sweep for the Penguins. I'm going to say 4-0. They advance into the next round. Our next matchup is the 2-7 matchup in the East. The Montreal Canadiens, who I've said all season long are my biggest surprise this year in the NHL, going from dead last in the East to the number 2 seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs. They will take on the Ottawa Senators, the number 7 seed. They met 4 times this season. Montreal won 2 of those games. They also lost 1 in regulation and lost 1 in overtime or shootout, so fairly competitive. But again, Montreal, interesting that in their season finale against Toronto, they decided to rest Carey Price, give him some time off going into the playoffs. And Ottawa, I don't know if they were countering, but you had mentioned it in passing in the first period. In that big game against Boston where they had something on the line because they didn't want to play Pittsburgh in the first round,
right?
They put Robin Leonard in net and not Craig Anderson. And barring something we don't know, that was a very interesting decision by head coach Paul McClain because obviously, Anderson doesn't need the rest. Like Carey Price, you could argue, I guess, might. But Leonard did enough to get the job done. And Montreal and Ottawa will match up in that 2-7 playoff series.
Well, it's also not worth it to give him the rest. If it's going to cost you a playoff seeding and you're going to end up facing Pittsburgh as a result, I don't care whether Craig Anderson's had a year off or a day off. That's not a matchup you want. You would think they would have played their best goalie, but they didn't. They still won the game anyway, and so they've been rewarded by getting to play the second best team. But I like this matchup. If you're going to be a 7 seed taking on a number 2 seed, I would love to play a team that is an overachieving division winner that may be content a little bit in their core with what the season that they've already had. A lot of teams, Pittsburgh is not content winning the Atlantic Division. They expect to win the Stanley Cup, but I think Montreal is content. It's been a good season. If they lose in the first round, this was still a good season for them. So I think a little bit of psychological advantage to Ottawa in that they're playing a team that is basically on even footing. I don't think you look at this as a typical 2-7 matchup. This feels a lot more like a 4-5 to me, and I think this is very much up for grabs, especially with Erik Karlsson back in the lineup for Ottawa. It completely changes the dynamic of their power play, their transition game, their ability to get the puck out of their own zone. He seems like he's back to 100% as far as his ability to skate top minutes and play against the top pairings. So I think Ottawa is going into this as healthy and as well as could be expected, considering the struggles they had down the stretch and the health issues they've had all season long.
Well, I got to agree with you in almost every point you made.
Always.
Yeah. This does look more like a 4-5 matchup than a 2-7. As you mentioned, Erik Karlsson back. Obviously, he's going to help the breakout, getting it out of their own end and starting their offense. He's obviously going to help on the power play. They were fading a bit down the stretch, as we mentioned, in the first period. But with Karlsson back, a couple of big wins to end the season, taking a little momentum in, I see this as a pretty competitive series. So I will admit...
Montreal, by the way, I don't want to say backing into the playoffs. They won their last two games, but they were 4-6 in their last 10 games. This is not a team that's playing at their best going into the playoffs. And Ottawa has that advantage of having to fight for their playoff spot up until the last week. Montreal had it clinched a while ago that they knew that they were going to make the playoffs. So they have that edge going, that role. They're in a consistent pattern right now, and they can just carry right over. And I think playing on this extra day of the season is a little bit of an advantage to them, that it continues that role. It's less gap between the regular season and the playoffs.
That's certainly possible. As far what we think, how it's going to play out in this one, I'll go first, and I will say I haven't underestimated Montreal all year, but obviously I, as I've said, I'm shocked at how well they've played, and I don't want to underestimate them at this point. They still have earned the number two seed in the East. I will say, though, a little disappointed. I was looking forward to a possible Canadiens-Maple Leafs first-round matchup. If Ottawa would have lost this game, we would have had that 4-5 matchup of Montreal against Toronto, which I thought would have been just a ton of fun. But that's not the matchup we've gotten. I still think Montreal is the better team. I still think they have the advantage in net. And I'm going to pick Montreal in six games, but I think it'll be a competitive series. And I won't be shocked if Ottawa is able to win this in six or seven.
You've got Montreal in six.
I got Montreal in six.
I've got the exact opposite. I have Ottawa in six. I think their momentum, their goaltending. I don't think Carey Price was that great this season. He was okay. You talked about it in the first period with James Reimer, that he was just okay. He was good enough to get them into the playoffs. The Montreal Canadiens did not win the division because of Carey Price. He happened to be their goalie when they won the division. So I think the goaltending advantage goes to Ottawa Senators. I think Craig Anderson was far superior in net this season. I think having gotten Erik Karlsson back, and as is pointed out on our Google Plus chat by Sean Endress, that he did play 27 minutes in his return. It's a guy that can handle big minutes already. I think he's ready to go. I think this whole team is ready to go, and I think they favor this matchup. I like the and I think that's why they were motivated to win that last game of the season against Boston. I like them in six games against the Montreal Canadiens.
All right, let's move on to the 3-6 matchup, a matchup that, at least as far as I can tell, doesn't have a lot of history. I mean, I was talking about Toronto and Montreal maybe matching up. And while the Capitals and the Rangers may not have a history, at least that I know of in postseason play, this is still, to me, a very entertaining matchup. You've got two teams heading into the playoffs playing some very good hockey. The Rangers have found their offense. The Capitals, obviously, have been a high-scoring team as of late, led by Alexander Ovechkin. You've got some star power in this one as well. You've got Ovechkin going up against Lundqvist. I just think this is going to be a fun series, maybe a little bit unpredictable, but I think it's a good matchup, even though it's the 3-6. As far as the regular season went, the Rangers did win the season series, two wins, no losses in regulation, and that they won loss in a shootout to Washington. Your thoughts on this matchup between the Capitals and Rangers?
Well, I've never been a big believer in the New York Rangers defense as far as their defensemen,
and by the way, to the show, we didn't mention it, but Mark Stahl, he had been practicing, but apparently the vision isn't right, what it needs to be, and so it doesn't look like he's going to be at least playing in this opening series, which is, if they could have had him, that would have been a huge
boost to him. But I've never, even with Mark Stahl, I'm not a huge believer in the strength of their defense. Their goalie is outstanding. Their defense, I don't think, is, I think it's average, and I think their team defense is good. Their forwards do a good job of back-checking and helping out in the defensive zone. But the reason I bring that up is because with Alexander Ovechkin playing as well as he is, they need to put a couple of defensemen out on the ice. They're going to be able to keep up with him, and take away scoring chances without taking penalties, without giving them man advantages. I think special teams are going to be critical in this series. Washington, I think, is going to take advantage on the power play as often as they can, and that's going to be the key to them getting wins. I don't think they're going to score a lot of goals 5-on-5. I think their power play is going to carry them in this series, and I think Washington's going to try and get this into a bit of a track meet, try and score a lot of goals. I don't think the Rangers want that. I don't think they can win in that style of game. But I do like the Capitals, their momentum, their confidence, and especially when Ovechkin's going that good, he's the tide that rises all ships in Washington. I really like the way he's playing. I think that gives everybody on that roster confidence that we got a guy that can go out and win the game for us single-handedly. Braden Holtby's playing well. I think they're just going to go out with a ton of confidence, nothing to lose. They're the underdog in the series a little bit because I think a lot of teams at the beginning of the season would say the Rangers are the better team. So even though you're the division champ, I think you can go in with a little bit of an underdog mentality. They're very similar in points as far as the overall points in the season. It just happens to be that the Capitals were in the Southeast. But I like the way Washington's going in, and I'm not wild about the Rangers even yet. I like their ability to score goals, win games on defense if they need to, but I'm still dubious of their overall ability to dominate games and impose their will and their style on another team.
Yeah, and as you mentioned when we talked about in the first period when the Capitals clinched a playoff spot, playing in the Southeast Division, so the 3-6 matchup, a little bit misleading as far as the seeding. When you look at the records and the points, Washington 27-18-3, the Rangers 26-18-4, Washington with 57 points, the Rangers with 56 points, so pretty even matchup. I've been beating the drum of the Rangers all season, so I may be biased by that. Again, I'm really looking forward to this series. I think it'll be a 7-game series. In the end, I am going to take the New York Rangers in 7.
Well, then put me down for the exact same, my friend. I will also take the Rangers in 7. I think Lundqvist is going to be the difference for him. I think he can steal a game. And if it comes down in overtime, I trust him to make the big save more than I trust Braden Holtby, who had a great end of the season. But I think, as I said in the first period, there's a difference between playing the Southeast and there's a difference between playing top competition. The Capitals are going to be playing top competition. I think the experience and the goaltending edge go to the Rangers, and I give them just a slight advantage in 7 games.
Final matchup out East is the 4-5 matchup, and that's the Boston Bruins against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And two Original Six teams, but this one doesn't have, obviously, that sizzle as it would have been if it would have been Montreal and Toronto.
Oh, of course.
Bruins going into the playoffs, not playing real well. Their power play has been bad all season. They just don't look right. They had Milan Lucic was a healthy scratch late in the year, trying to motivate him to play a little bit better. The Bruins are a talented team. We talked about how it seemed like they're getting healthy at the right time by getting Bergeron and Marchand back, but it just seems like for whatever reason they're not clicking right now. So I am concerned a little bit about Boston, but Toronto at the same time, they're not exactly lighting the world on fire either here late in the season. In net, you certainly would think that Tuukka Rask has the edge for Boston. Obviously, when you have a 4-5 matchup, it always seems like a pretty even matchup, but really kind of the opposite of the Washington-New York series where you've got these two teams kind of going into the postseason playing right around 500 hockey. Your thoughts, Doug, on the Bruins and Maple Leafs matchup?
Well, the Maple Leafs are a tough team to figure out. I'm not entirely sure what to expect from Toronto in the playoffs because there's so much of an unknown quantity. But if they are able to play the same style they did during the regular season, then we can expect them to be very competitive and to have a great chance to win every game. As I said in the first period, this was never a team that seemed like they were out of any game. They were involved. They were always competitive. They always seemed ready to play. And they gave themselves chances to win every single night. I expect that to be the same. But Boston does seem to have another level in the playoffs when it gets to that point. Now, whether or not they'll have that, Tim Thomas had an aura about him because of the cup win. We'll see if he's able to if Tuukka Rask is able to do that in the postseason this season. But it's I don't know. There's something about Boston I'm not quite sold on, but there's a lot about Toronto I'm not sold on. I don't know that they have somebody that they can turn to when they need a goal and put on the ice. I'm not sure that they will be able to make the saves when they need to make them, that the defense will be able to come through when they need to. I just like Boston's veteran experience and especially playoff experience in this situation. I think Toronto is going to have a lot of pressure on them from the fans and the media. Boston is used to that, is ready to play. I think they get the start early on. And I will say, Boston, in I've got it written down here, the answer key, 7 games.
Okay.
Some good series going on in the first round.
Well, we hope.
You agree?
I agree.
Boston in 7? Boston.
I'm going to pick Boston in 6, though.
Oh, all right, then.
I'm going to say that once the playoffs come on here, they're going to turn their intensity up, obviously, turn their play up a little bit, and I'm going to take them in 6 games. So
we've got the, to recap.
Yes.
You've got the number 1, the number 2, the number 6, and the number 5 seeds advancing. Is that correct? We both have the same teams except for Ottawa.
Correct.
I have number 6. So I have one. Well, I have a 7 seed. I only have the one favorite winning. I got to rethink that.
No, you've already, we've gotten you down.
I've already committed.
You've committed. I'm sorry.
Actually, Boston is the 4 seed, so that would set up a delicious Boston-Pittsburgh second round. I think, no, Ottawa-Pittsburgh second round, and then Boston-New York. But either way, I look forward to the first round. I think there should be some great series. Which of these 4 are you looking forward to the most?
Oh, by far, the Capitals and the Rangers.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
By far?
By far.
Interesting. I'm so looking forward to Montreal-Ottawa. I think those games are going to be just up and down, entertaining games to watch. I don't think either one tries to play a defense-first style. I think both are going to be pretty open and try and score some goals.
So, again, I've got the Penguins in 4. Doug has them in 5 against the Islanders. The only one we disagree on is Montreal-Ottawa. I've got Montreal in 6. Doug has the Senators in 6. We both think the Rangers are going to win in 7 in their series over the Capitals, and we both think the Bruins will win in their series over the Maple Leafs. I've got them in 6. Doug has them in 7. Let us shift over to the Western Conference playoff matchups, and we knew all the matchups going into the final day of the regular season, but obviously we had to hold off and see what was going to happen in the East. That's why we're recording the show on Sunday and not on Saturday.
Or even Friday.
The 1-8 matchup has the Chicago Blackhawks against the Minnesota Wild. And as we touched on earlier, Doug, some of these matchups are pretty tough. They give you, you got to think about it a little bit. But I think this is one matchup where you don't have to put too much thought into it, frankly.
No.
The Blackhawks have steamrolled through the season. The Minnesota Wild have, without taking too much away from them, they're not playing their best hockey down the stretch, to say the least. I don't want to say they've backed in. They earned it, but
I'll say they backed in.
You can say they backed in if you want. But they did earn their way in. I don't want to take too much away from them. But Chicago is just, unless Nicholas Backstrom can absolutely stand on his head, I don't see it being a competitive series. I know there is an injury issue with Ray Emery, but Corey Crawford has put up virtually identical numbers as Emery this year. They're kind of a 1A, 1B situation in net there. I don't think the offensive firepower really needs to be needs to be said for Chicago. We know what they've got. Defense is solid. It looks very one-sided. As far as the season series, Chicago did win it. They played 3 times. The Blackhawks won 2 of them. Minnesota did win in a shootout in January. But it looks like Chicago should have a pretty easy time with this matchup.
I would take I really can't envision a scenario where Minnesota wins this series. I didn't like the way Nicholas Backstrom was playing down the stretch. He didn't look comfortable. He didn't look confident. I certainly don't think he's going to steal 4 wins out of this series. Without Danny Heatley, without Jason Pominville, the depth that they had on offense is missing. They're going to run Ryan Suter absolutely ragged. He's going to have to play 30-plus minutes every single night. He's going to be exhausted, and I'm sure the Blackhawks are going to put a body on him as often as possible to wear him down. If they have to, I don't think they do. I think this is, I mean, unlike last year where the Kings were the 8 seed and a dangerous 8 seed, the 2-8 seeds this year, Islanders and Wild, are not exactly dangerous teams. They are traditional 8 seeds. And the Minnesota Wild, in fact, are the only playoff team that gave up more goals than they scored in the entire NHL of the 16 teams that made it. They are a -5 on the season. So that tells you a couple things. One, they can't score many goals, and two, they're not great at keeping it out of their own net. And that's a bad combination to go into with the team that scored the most goals in the Western Conference, the second most in the NHL, in the Chicago Blackhawks, and the team that gave up the fewest goals in the NHL this season in the Chicago Blackhawks. I think it's going to be an absolute cakewalk for Chicago. As much as a playoff series in the NHL can be, I think this is going to be an easy victory for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Do you have the sweep?
I do not. I never like to give the sweep because I think teams have enough pride and just bounces here and there. But I will say the Blackhawks in 5.
Well, I'm going a clean sweep.
Break out the broom.
No pride in Minnesota.
Wow.
I know our friend Mike Lansky is cursing my name right now.
That has nothing to do with your prediction.
Xcel Energy Center.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say that Chicago rolls through and takes this one in 4 games. I hope I'm wrong because I don't like seeing the sweeps. But that's just the way I see it. So we shall see how it plays out. Let's go to the 2-7 matchup. The Anaheim Ducks, your number 2 seed in the West. The Detroit Red Wings, the number 7 seed in the West. The season series went to Detroit. They met 3 times. The Red Wings won 2 of the matchups. Anaheim taking their only win was on February the 15th. Detroit picked up 2 wins in March in a span of 2 days against the Anaheim Ducks. As I mentioned in the first period, you look at the Red Wings, you wonder, did they kind of expend themselves to reach the finish line to get that streak continuing? And was that their focus? Or is this a team that's getting hot at the right time? We'll have to wait and see. Anaheim's been there pretty consistent all season, obviously had a great year. No one expected it. Getting pretty balanced scoring, getting a lot of good secondary scoring. They've gotten good enough goaltending. By the way, who's the number one in net for the Ducks going into the postseason?
That's right. Nobody knows.
They have not said.
No. My indications, from what I can tell, Victor Faust will get the start in game 1. And I think that's as much to do with the long-term plan in Anaheim as it does with the short-term. He was better statistically this season. They played very even amounts of time. He had a little bit better save percentage, a little bit better goals against average. Hiller wasn't bad. It's very much like Chicago in that they have a 1 and 1A. They can go with either guy. But I think Victor Faust is going to get the start. They want him, I think, to be the starter so that they can trade Jonas Hiller in the offseason and give the backup job to, forgetting the name of their stud prospect, John Gibson, the prospect that potentially could be their backup next year. But Victor Faust has played very well this season, and I think he will get the start in net in game 1. Detroit, though, unlike in previous years where you think they're a team that is expected to go far, this does feel like a team that's happy to get into the playoffs. Now it's anything they do is gravy. And the Ducks, as much as I was down on them at the beginning of the season, they've won me over with their consistent play and their team defense and their effort and their balanced scoring. And I really, Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry, and Bobby Ryan still make a very dangerous line. I think this is Tamu's last year, so that could be a rallying point, much like Ray Lewis in the NFL. I think the Ducks are primed for a good run here in the postseason.
Well, the consistency is always obviously a key for any team, and as you mentioned, they have been very consistent. This is an interesting matchup. I'm curious to see how this plays out. I'm curious to see how Detroit comes out in game 1. I think we might, who knows, it's only 1 game, but we may see early on whether this is the Red Wings team that now has gotten new life from getting into that playoff. Maybe they're unburdened now that they don't have this cloud hanging over them as being the team that could have the streak come to an end.
And they don't have the burden of being a Stanley Cup contender. They're not the favorites. They can go in as an underdog for the first time in a long time.
It is an intriguing matchup. However,
they don't have the net front presence of Tomas Holmstrom.
No.
They don't have Nicklas Backstrom running the point on the power play or shutting down the other team's top line. They still have Datsyuk, who's a magician. They still have Zetterberg. Johan Franzen looks like he's better. Todd Bertuzzi saves his best efforts for the Ducks. I don't know why. He was terrible when he was in Anaheim.
If he plays, he's still...
But, I mean, yeah, we'll see. But it's... I'm curious to see what it is, but I just... Overall, I give the nod to Anaheim. It's not a big nod, though.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to pick the Ducks in six, but I think it's going to be a tough six. I think it'll be a lot of very competitive games.
Yes. Add one for me, and you got the Ducks in seven. I think home ice is going to be a key in this series. Ducks have never played well in Detroit, so I don't expect that to be the case in the playoffs either. But I do like the – I think the Ducks will send Detroit out of the Western Conference for good with a seven-game series win.
Let's go to the 3-6 matchup, the Vancouver Canucks against the San Jose Sharks. Interesting that the Sharks won all three games of the series.
How much do you put into that?
I put something into it. I think yeah. I don't think it's irrelevant. You know, matchups are a part of it, and for whatever reason, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in our next series as well. But for whatever reason this year, and again, one of them was a shootout win, but the Sharks have beaten the Canucks in all three meetings. And again, we talked about it in the first period. San Jose is a streaky team. They don't go into the playoffs on fire, but they're playing decent hockey down the stretch. So an interesting matchup in this one. You've got Antti Niemi again, who is without question the number one. There's no controversy in San Jose. He's their number one. He's had a solid year in Vancouver. We still don't know what's going on with Corey Snyder. Roberto Luongo was awful in his last game of the year. Now, granted, the Canucks did rest some players in that final game against Edmonton, but he did not look good. So a little bit of uncertainty in net for Vancouver.
Well, I don't think uncertainty. I think Vancouver knew they had nothing to play for. It's very tough to get up for a game that, really, you just want to get out of it healthy. You don't want to lose anybody to injury. They didn't look motivated against the Ducks the game before that for the same reason. It was just winning this game does nothing for us in the standings, and losing doesn't cost us anything. They were locked in at number three. So I kind of disregard those last two. But you have to wonder, can they turn it on, find the fire in that first game? Are they going to be ready to play? And is San Jose going to be ready to play? They were a team that had guaranteed themselves a spot. They had basically a playoff game type atmosphere against LA, and they lost it in that final game as they were trying to get the, I think they were still in fight for the five seed.
Actually, the four seed.
If St. Louis had lost, right. So, but I don't know. Neither team is looking impressive to me in the last couple weeks of the season. So it's, to me, which team responds better, which team brings their A game first and gets hot. And I think that first game is going to be key. You want to have a good game. If that's a blowout either way, that could really change the momentum and the tone of that series, giving one team confidence, especially, as you said, if San Jose, who swept the season series, blows out Vancouver in game one, puts some doubt into their goaltending, puts some doubt into Vancouver of here we go again with Luongo or whatever the case is. That could really help San Jose's momentum. They get home ice. They go back to San Jose for 3-4. Who knows what happens? But that's going to be a good series to watch. It's going to be fun. But I still think Vancouver's just, this is what they prepare for. They are ready to go. They've been waiting for the playoffs since the season was announced. And I think they're going to be ready to go when that puck drops.
Well, and since they were knocked out in the first round last year by the LA Kings, obviously that was a bitter pill to swallow when they had come within one win of winning it all the year before. So right. You would think that, I don't want to say that the regular season was kind of a formality for them. I mean, you obviously have to go out there and play the games and you want to be playing at a high level. But I think it was about getting back into the playoffs and taking another run at it and getting that taste out of their mouths a little bit.
Yep.
And I do think Vancouver is the better team. We'll see again. San Jose's streaky. We talked about the season series. That game one could be huge for San Jose if they can get the win, obviously on the road. We'll see. In the end, though, I think we're both picking Vancouver to win the series. Number of games for you, Mr. Stolian?
Six. Put me down for six for the Canucks. And you?
I am going to agree with you and pick the Canucks in six games as well.
That almost assures that it will not happen.
Our final matchup, playoff matchup, is the 4-5 matchup in the West. St. Louis Blues, the number 4 seed. The LA Kings, the number 5 seed. St. Louis coming in, playing some fantastic hockey down the stretch, as I mentioned in the first period, blowing past both San Jose and LA to capture that number 4 seed. But if you believe in matchups and recent history for whatever reason, and it is surprising to me because I think these two teams are pretty similar in style, the Kings have had their way with the St. Louis Blues. They swept them out of the playoffs last year. They were 3-0 against them in the regular season this year. I don't know how much that comes into play. It's hard for me to believe that it doesn't enter the minds at all of the St. Louis players that, you know, if they fall behind early in the series, they start scratching their heads and say, what is it with this team? You know, they play with defense. They win with goaltending. That's what we do as well. But I just think the Kings with Jeff Carter, with Andrei Kopitar, a little bit more firepower than St. Louis, obviously a little more consistent effort up front. Again, we'll see what happens with Brian Elliott. He's certainly, talk about a bad taste in your mouth with Vancouver. He's got to have a horrible taste in his mouth from last year in the playoffs where he just fell on his face. He does have Yaroslav Halak to back him up, which he didn't have in the playoffs a year ago because of the injury. But I see a very motivated St. Louis team. Now, I thought last year when they played in the playoffs, it would be a very low-scoring, long series. It wasn't. I think it's going to be a low-scoring, long series again. We'll see if I'm right. What are your thoughts on this matchup?
I think it comes down to the first game. St. Louis, it's crazy to say this in a game one. They have to win that game. You cannot lose the first game after losing seven straight because all you're going to be asked is, why can't you beat this team? And you're going to be asking yourselves that. Why can't we beat this team? And the Kings are going to be like, we got these guys. I mean, we know we can beat the St. Louis Blues. You said a little bit more. They got a ton more firepower. I mean, the
Blues. But they don't score more goals. We took the goals per game is what I'm saying.
But the Blues have nobody even close to the talent of Andrei Kopitar, Mike Richards, Jeff Carter. None of them. They have people like Dustin Brown. They have guys that are good all-around players, but they don't have anybody that can go out there and score a goal on any given shift and take over a game like those three can. So the firepower is completely in the Kings' favor. The only thing that could help the Blues is the two trades that they made at the deadline to get better on defense. Their defense is better and deeper than it was a year ago. I think if that plays into their, they have to win games low scoring. They cannot get into any kind of a shootout. Three goals or more is too many. They got to keep this thing 3-2, 2-1, 1-0. Those are the games St. Louis can win. If it gets into a up and down, who's going to score more goals, the Kings are going to win every single time. They just have more talent, more depth, more everything on offense. So I don't see a reason to like the Blues in this situation. I don't pay too much attention to the season series, but when I see seven straight losses to a team going back to last season and the mental baggage that brings with it, I don't like the Blues' chances in this series.
All right. Well, I said I thought it was going to go. It was not going to be a short series. We'll certainly see, as you said, the first couple of games for St. Louis should be crucial.
Huge, yeah. If they come back down 2-0,
yeah.
I mean, they're not even, you know, tickets for game five can be had for a quarter. I mean, because there ain't going to be one.
Yeah. I'm taking the Kings in six.
I got them in five.
Ooh, okay.
And I just don't, there's, of the first round matchups, this is, you got Pittsburgh, Chicago, and LA are my three guaranteed wins. I don't see those three teams losing. Anything's possible. But it would take something extraordinary for those three teams to lose in the first round. The other five matchups, I could see some, you know, something happening here or there. I just don't see St. Louis finding a way to do it.
Well, we're in a complete agreement in the West. We both have Chicago. I've got them in four. You've got them in five. We both have Anaheim. I've got them in six. You have them in seven. We both have Vancouver in six, and we both have LA. I say six games. And you say five games. So there's only one series in the playoffs that we are
not
seeing
good.
The same team.
That's not good.
And that's Montreal and Ottawa.
You've been cheating off my papers again is what you've been doing.
No, I haven't.
I think the playoffs, we don't have a schedule yet I know
we do
of.
Not.
And but I know they start on Tuesday. I can't wait. I mean, it is going to be outstanding.
And the first round of the playoffs, to me, is always the best because there's so many games going on. There's so many interesting matchups going on. It's kind of like the first round of the NCAA tournament. There's so many games. There's so many interesting storylines. There's so many controversies. There's always something going on every night. So many games. And it's almost like a letdown once that first round, you know, kind of goes
right
by the board. So enjoy the first round.
Have multiple games every night. It's double headers, triple headers if you TiVo them or
DVR
them.
It's an orgy of hockey. Come on. Indeed. It's playoff hockey.
This is why we all love this sport. And this is about to be the best competition. The compete level for these players, the blocking the shots, the diving for loose pucks. It's going to be off the charts. I hope every series goes 7 games. I really do. As much as that would pain me as a Ducks fan to, you know, you'll be nervous, I'd love it because the tension and the drama would be outstanding.
Well, it was a shortened regular season, but the playoffs aren't shortened. It's still going to take the same number of wins to be crowned a champion as it did every other year in the modern era of hockey. So it's always a great storylines, the sacrifice, and guys emerging as playoff heroes, and you know, it's just great drama.
We know
the ultimate reality show.
Absolutely, new episodes every night. We know who's made the playoffs. Are you ready to give an updated cup prediction? Who will meet in the finals?
My prediction to start the year is my prediction to finish the year. I'm not changing. No.
What do you got?
I've got the Blues and the Rangers.
Really?
I mean, I'm going to stick with my preseason prediction.
But if you could change, if you were starting fresh, that would not be your pick, would it?
No, but they're both in. They're both playing well going into the playoffs, so I'm not going to change.
All right.
Even though I picked the Kings to win in the opening round.
Yeah, you don't even have them. So, come on. You obviously don't have the Blues going. Who do you think is coming out of the West then?
I'm gonna say Chicago.
So you got the President's Trophy winning Chicago Blackhawks coming out of the West to face the New York Rangers. You're sticking to that?
Well, let me hear your pick in the West before I give you my Eastern Conference pick.
My pick to win, it's going to be Vancouver against Pittsburgh.
Okay.
No, it's not. It's the Kings in Pittsburgh, and it's going to be Pittsburgh winning the Cup.
Now, who did you pick at the beginning of the year?
I picked Buffalo, but who was
Buffalo against the Kings?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the Kings are still going to win the West, and they're going to face the Pittsburgh Penguins, and then they're going to have just – they're finally going to meet a team that is better than them,
yeah.
And that's the Pittsburgh Penguins. I don't really see anybody beating Pittsburgh in these playoffs unless injury devastates their lineup.
Yeah. I'm going to pick the Penguins against the Blackhawks, which has zero chance of happening.
Yeah, when's the last time both one seeds played?
That's a great question. I would love to know the answer to that. We'll have to look that up before the next show. But there's no way that's going to happen. But what do? You pick the teams that are the most talented.
No, absolutely. Look, Pittsburgh, once they made their trades.
And by the way, who wouldn't? I know there's the haters of the Penguins. We all want our team, if they make the playoffs, to obviously make the Stanley Cup Finals. But if it's – throw that out, wouldn't you – that would be a very entertaining Stanley Cup Final, would it not?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm saying how could that? I mean, the star power on each team, you know, the tradition of.
Well, look, those north of the border, I'm sure, are looking for a Toronto Vancouver matchup. You know, they want that to bring the cup back to Canada. If you're just a pure hockey fan, if you just got into the sport and you just want to see great theater, then I think seeing the two best teams in the regular season meet for the Stanley Cup final would be fantastic.
And
I don't think anybody wants to see Minnesota Islanders. Okay? Nobody wants to see that final. NBC may not even televise it.
I don't think they'll have to worry about it. But and then the extra little caveat this year of no regular season matchups.
That's correct. Is
interesting.
Which I liked. The unknown going into it. But Pittsburgh, once they made their choices, it's hard to pick against them. You know, you go down the list in the Eastern Conference. And you're like, well, that team's not better than them. That team's not better. It would be an upset. No matter who lost to them, it would be an upset. Now, it would not be an upset for Chicago to lose, in my opinion. The Kings played well against them, and the Ducks played well against them. The Ducks swept the season series against them. So there's teams in the West that you could say, yeah, they match up well against Chicago. They could beat them. I don't see a team in the East that I say, there's a candidate that could beat them. I just don't see it.
All right, so that's going to do it for the second period. There are our predictions. If you want to make yours, you can certainly do that on our Facebook page or send us some feedback.
We got more than that, Ed. Here we go. Let me read this copy that I was given.
By who?
I'll show you in a second. By me, actually. It is from a listener. He says, "Think you can predict the playoffs better than me and Eddie? Of course you do.
Yeah.
You're probably right as well. But you have a chance to prove it. Send your picks for the first round to puckpodcast.picks@gmail.com. Entries must be received before the first game on Tuesday to enter. All you need to do is say which team you think will win each series and how many games you think it will take them. It's free to enter, and we will continue to make picks in the second, third, and final rounds as well. Whoever does the best overall throughout the entire playoffs will win a prize to be determined. Good luck, and we want to thank listener Kyle Schaub for putting this together this season. Last year, it was
very good, Kyle. Thank you.
It was our listener friend, I'm spacing on his name, in Minnesota that helped us out. Anderson is his last name. I cannot remember his first name.
You're terrible.
That's terrible. I am very bad with names. You are.
I'm better than you, but I'm not. I'm trying to play.
What is your name? Eddie.
Jeez.
Kyle Schaub put this together. I have it written
down.
What was
the email address again?
puckpodcast.picks@gmail.com. I'm going to look up this guy because I haven't even have him in my cell phone.
We'll put it on our Facebook page.
Who
as
did?
Well.
Who helped us out last year with that? Anyway, vamp, Eddie, while I look up this poor
well,
guy's
that's
name, and
do
I
it.
Apologize in advance.
That will do it for the second period. Thanks to everybody who's been joining us on our Google Hangout as well. Of course, it couldn't go off glitch-free, as for some reason they can't see me. My camera isn't working, but they see a beautiful picture of me kissing the Stanley Cup. But for those of us that are with us in our Google Hangout, hang out a little bit more. We'll have some
Steve Anderson.
We'll have some exclusive content
for you. My apologies, Steve. You're a good man. You deserve better.
So that's going to do it for the second period.
Thank you very much for all of those that joined us on the second on Google Plus Hangouts. And thanks to, look at that. Steve Smith helping me out on Google Plus, telling me that it was Steve Anderson. A guy, a listener, knows that it was Steve Anderson helping us out last year. So thank you very much, Steve. He's nodding in agreement now. Thank you very much to those of you that joined us. And I thank, again, Kyle Schaub for putting that together. Again, puckpodcast.picks@gmail.com. Just put the name of the team that you think will win each series and how many games they'll do it in, and you are entered.
And include your name, too, so he'll know who you are when he's tabulating these picks.
Yes, so it's not just flipperflapper@AOL.com.
Yeah, one of those names that Brian Burke is suing.
For high-quality, professional-style hockey jerseys, your best choice is Tally Hockey Jerseys. At Tally Hockey Jerseys, we only use the highest quality twill letters and numbers when customizing jerseys for teams. We take special pride in creating cool and unique crafts for teams from all over the world. Tally Hockey Jerseys offers 14 jersey designs that combine classic design details with today's performance fabrics. All Tally Hockey Jerseys have throwback design details, just like the best and most expensive throwback jerseys, minus the high price. All 14 styles of Tally Hockey jerseys are only $49 per jersey. That includes a jersey with your team's custom crest, as well as your name and number in double layer or single layer twill, depending on your jersey style. If you're interested in ordering 12 or more jerseys for your team, but don't have a team crest design, no problem. Tally Hockey Jerseys will design one for you for free. If you need jerseys for a team and want a cool crest but don't want to order 12 jerseys, ask about our stock crest. For more information or to place an order, contact Dave at tallyhockeyjerseys.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page to see hundreds of pictures of custom crests we've created for other teams. That's Tally Hockey Jerseys, T-A-L-L-Y, Hockey Jerseys.
Top of the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast. And Doug, before we get going here, the schedules have been released. We can let you know that the series between the Wild and the Blackhawks will start on Tuesday, as will the series between the Kings and the Blues and the Red Wings and the Ducks, all those series starting on Tuesday. Wednesday, the Bruins and the Maple Leafs will get underway, so will the Islanders and Penguins and the Sharks and Canucks. Thursday, the Senators and the Canadiens will get underway, as will the Rangers and the Capitals. So there's your start.
Interesting pause there, delay there for a few of those teams, get a few extra days of rest. The Ducks will be playing Game 2, as will the Kings and Blues, on the same day that some teams will be playing Game 1. Doesn't seem quite fair, does
very
it?
Very NBA-like.
Yes, but anyway, there's your schedule. Now, I've been fighting a cold for a few days, and I'm not feeling well. I'm medicated to get through the show. If I was to go to the Red Wings game in Anaheim on Tuesday, would it be wrong of me to go to the Red Wings locker room instead of the King or the Ducks, and in case my germs were to be spread?
Yes, I would say so.
I'm not going to go cough on anybody. But
you're not going to do like that commercial and sneeze in the guy's face in the dentist
certainly
chair?
Certainly not. Oh, that is a terrible commercial.
God.
But no, it would, and I won't do it. But I don't even think I'll be able to go to the game, honestly. Work has been a little busy lately, but I hope to go, yes. But there you go. There's your schedules.
All right, before we get into the emails and the fan correspondence, some corrections and retractions.
We have that coming up. Don't use the one if that's the only one you have.
Oh, is that we have from an email?
We have something coming up.
Then we will be corrected and retracted in the email portion of the show.
Yes.
Or fan correspondent, whatever.
Nope. The fan correspondent portion of the show begins now. And we start with Stars fan correspondent Barry Alford, who writes, "It's been reported that after 4 years, Joe Nieuwendyk is out as GM of the Dallas Stars and will be replaced by longtime Red Wings assistant Jim Nill. It was also reported that Nill had actually turned down offers from other teams to be GM before accepting the same job with the Stars. Stars will miss the playoffs for the fifth straight year, and a number of Nieuwendyk's questionable decisions have led to their continued mediocrity, such as bad drafting. Two glaring examples are passing up big defenseman Jared Cowan in 2009 to take skinny, undersized forward Scott Glennie with the 8th overall pick. Cowan was taken by the Senators with the following pick. In 2010, Nieuwendyk passed up Cam Fowler with the 11th pick to take goaltender Jack Campbell. The Ducks scooped up Fowler with the very next pick. Both Cowan and Fowler are already contributing with their respective teams, while Glennie and Campbell have yet to play in the NHL. For a team that desperately needs help on the blue line, those were head-scratching trades. Those were head-scratching decisions. Also, Nieuwendyk has pulled off extremely questionable trades, like sending James Neal to the Penguins for Alex Goligoski. Finally, he has made bad personnel decisions, like firing Dave Tippett and replacing him with Mark Crawford. If nothing else, Dallas is getting a GM that has studied under one of the best GMs in all of sports, Ken Holland, so the future may be finally looking bright for the Dallas Stars, but only time will tell." Capitals fan correspondent Denise Acheson says, "Caps fans were talking about the success of the third and fourth line wagons after the Southeast clinching game with the Jets. The third stars of the game were all grinders, John Erskine, who alone saved two goals, Matt Hendricks and Jason Chimera. As the first star, Hendricks spent most of the post-game interview with his arm around reporter Al Koken, grinning from ear to ear, joking about his goal. 'I thought it was all skill,' he said. Hendricks' goal bounced off of Jets goalie Andre Pavlek and in. Other goals were scored by Jason Chimera and Matthew Perreault. Fans hope this kind of scoring depth continues, as does Adam Oates, who said, quote, 'It's funny how every team has those guys that sacrifice in the playoff,' end quote. There's been a lot of discussion on why the Caps have such a bad start, at one time being last in the league, and how they turned their season around. Oates said that getting injured player back and taking care of our own end played the biggest part in the Caps' success. Regarding Alexander Ovechkin's switch to the right side, Oates said that Ilya Kovalchuk's success the previous year helped him convince Ovi to change. Looking at a lot of video of Kovalchuk helped. Oates gives Ovechkin a lot of credit for being willing to change for the team and now himself. That is it for the fan correspondent portion of the show. I thank all of you that contributed, and if you would like to join the ranks, correspondence@puckpodcast.com.
All right, let's get into this week's emails. Our first email comes from Sean in Cross Lanes, West Virginia. He says, "Hey guys, I hope you'll forgive what follows as a rant of a fan whose team has once again missed the playoffs in a disappointing fashion. I almost wrote you guys on Tuesday night after the Sharks loss when I was so angry I couldn't sleep, but what little remained of my reason got the better of me. Well, the inevitable finally happened. After the Stars once again missed the playoffs, Joe Nieuwendyk has been sacked. While I can't say that he didn't make his share of good decisions, like the acquisition of Kari Lehtinen, I still feel he's done more harm than good. For Gretzky's sake, in 2010, the guy drafted a goalie over that year's top defenseman, even though the organization was stacked with goalies. Woof! that should have been a sign of things to come. Let's not forget his attempt to turn the AAC into a convalescent home. The season's over now, and I'm still not sure why the team acquired Yager, Whitney, and Roy in the first place. It couldn't have been to sell tickets, and signing a player in July to trade them for prospects at the deadline is a dubious proposition at best, especially when there's an impending lockout. Here's hoping that Glenn Gullitson is next on the chopping block. His penchant for playing Jacques Lemaire-style hockey with such defensive studs as Trevor Daley and Alex Goligoski has cost the Stars many a game, most recently last week's matchup against the Sharks. He may not have had much to work with, but that's no excuse to hang on to an average coach. It's an excuse to find someone who can get the job done and what the team has. Regarding West Virginia's state motto, I asked you guys a couple of weeks ago, Montani Semper Libre was the state motto. Doug was almost right when he said, "Mountains bring freedom."
I took my guess based on word roots.
Okay. It actually means Mountaineers are always free. Okay.
Yes. There you go. Well, then thank you for that. Our next email comes from Jonathan in New Hampshire. Live free
or die.
This always sounds like a threat more than a proclamation. Hi, Doug and Eddie. I just pulled into my driveway as you guys were finishing your discussion on the Winter Classic outdoor games. I guess we need to call them now. I attended the 2010 Winter Classic at Fenway Park and wanted to share my thoughts. My uncle is a Bruins season ticket holder, so I've been fortunate enough to attend some big games in recent years. Aside from two cup games that were almost $300 each, the Classic is the most I've ever paid for a ticket. It was about $225, again, at season ticket holder rates. And the seats were about 10 rows behind the Red Sox dugout. The experience of being at the first ever Bruins game at the then 98-year-old facility was incredible. The viewing experience, however, is the worst I've ever had at a game in my life. Because of the angle I was at, I couldn't see any of the action at the near side boards at all, and had a skewed angle of the far net where the overtime goal was scored. We didn't even know it was in until the celebration. If the game switched cities every year, and there was only a game there every 30 years, it would be amazing. However, I'm not in any hurry to go back. The price was absurd, the view was terrible, and I was lucky that the 35 to 40 degree weather was the best I could have expected. If you told me I could see the Canadians at Fenway next year, or the Coyotes at the Garden, I'd go see the Yotes. It'd be much better bang for my buck. I agree with everything you said about this diluting the national interest, and that the two Rangers games at Yankee Stadiums will show that the local interest will fall off quickly as well. All in all, it's just another shining example of how out of touch Gary Bettman is with the interests and traditions of his fan base. I want to follow up with another email, Ed, if I could.
Sure.
Also about the outdoor games, and then we'll get to some of yours that also include that. This is from Rod in Brooklyn. He says, "Hey, Doug and Eddie, several outdoor games is a good idea for the league because it will expand their profits, but unfortunately water down the Winter Classic, which was, until now, a unique event. When they decided to do this, there were a few guys sitting in a room adding up the amount of money in the league would make from tickets, food, drinks, merchandise, in additional screw jobs like expensive parking and stupid hats. Like a need to see someone wearing a Rangers fedora on the train. They also added up the amount of money they would make in the Winter Classic TV revenue and times it by six. They started drooling so quickly they needed a Winter Classic baby bib not to stain their overpriced shirts. What they fail to realize is that with six games being played, interest will diminish and so will the TV ratings. How is this possible? If we made this much from one game, we should make six times that much for six games. I learned that in my corporate math class, along with creationism. I read both of these tidbits in books, so they have to be true. There's a reason why there's one Super Bowl per year, not six. Side note, you mentioned if you were a Rangers season ticket holder, you would be annoyed that you're losing two games at the Garden. From what I've been hearing, those two outdoor games played in New York will be away games for the Rangers. So they will be home games for the Islanders and the Devils. The Islanders is one thing. They're a New York team. But the Devils playing a home game in New York? How is that possible? It's possible because the Rangers won't lose any games at MSG and get 43 home games next season. Their original 41 at MSG and two unofficial home games at Yankee Stadium. Don't get me wrong. If I'm a Devils fan, a New Yorker, and a hockey fan, I'll still watch those games played in Yankee Stadium after I decide not to go because I don't want to spend $400 on a ticket. It will be cool to turn on the TV and see a random outdoor game during the season, but it will not be a Winter Classic. Also, with all these additional outdoor games at the Winter Classic, that won't be a Winter Classic. So some more feedback on what we talked about, and Ed, we got more still to come.
That's right. We asked you to write if you liked the idea of six outdoor games or could find a reason that it was a good idea. And we got Scott in British Columbia to write in. He says, "I am not a big fan of the Winter Classic to begin with. I live in British Columbia and have no plans to go to the outdoor game in Vancouver, although I would always rather stay home and watch the game from my couch bed than to go to any live game. However, people seem to enjoy the outdoor games and many teams have been begging to get one. I understand that there is something special about the Winter Classic, and the fact that there is only one every year made it extra special. But I think people who are excited about going to an outdoor game are going to attend the extra outdoor games that the NHL will have next year. The Winter Classic will have less universal appeal, but the people in the local markets where they're going to have an outdoor game are going to find their own game special. More outdoor games will mean more money for the NHL, which will also mean more money for the players, which means a salary cap will go up, which means the teams will have more money to spend to retain the best players in the NHL rather than see them go to Europe. I don't expect to change anybody's mind because I don't find anything about the Winter Classic all that special to begin with. but I'm hoping that this will succeed and more people will be made happy with the opportunity to see an outdoor game, and I hope that more revenue is generated for the league by it.
Well, there you go. At least an argument in favor of it, if not he's not a big fan of it, and he's in one of the cities that it's going to be played, and he won't go. But I can see the point being made that it will increase revenue for the NHL, most likely, and that will increase league salary cap and so on. So I can see that point being made. Your next email, I believe, Ed, is from Jason.
It is.
In Calgary.
I didn't know I was going back to back.
You are.
Okay. Jason in Calgary writes, and by the way, he's an Edmonton Oilers fan.
Yes.
We talked a lot about the Oilers last week in the first period. He said, first and foremost, I absolutely understand the trepidation about the Oilers hiring Craig McTavish as their GM. After all, who really wants to reunite the group that brought you such hits as Chris Pronger for Joffrey Lupul, Ladislav Smead and Magic Beans, or Ryan Smith for a pile of dog feces, or the old-timey classic, my ego is more important than this Corey Perry for Mike Comrie deal, so I'll take Jeff Wawrzyk instead.
That was an honest-to-goodness trade proposal that the Ducks made to the Oilers and got turned down on.
I agree wholeheartedly with Doug that Kevin Lowe's continued employment is befuddling. He should have been fired for good after botching the two most important deals of the first rebuild. But because the owner is buddies with several of the boys on the bus, the Oilers' record of nepotism is allowed to continue seemingly in perpetuity. That being said, I actually don't mind this move. For starters, Craig McTavish was a good strategic coach. He made the best use of the often paltry resources available to him. As fans who pay attention to matchups can attest, suggesting that he was a competent evaluator of on-ice talent. This is in contrast to Randy Carlyle, who's justifying Doug's opinion of him by spending most of the year with Nazem Kadri on a third line with two goons. Second, despite his reputation as the last player without a helmet, he's always been quite a cerebral guy. It was a great relief to hear actual English come from the GM instead of a bunch of mealy-mouthed cliches. His MBA might make him the first actual qualified negotiator in recent Oilers front office history. Lohausen and Tambellini have demonstrated no capacity for either making good contracts or signing value contracts in recent years. Like Rick Olszczyk has been a dismal failure as a capologist, making multiple horrific CBA-related blunders that were only caught by attentive bloggers. Third, after years of the man we call Dithers, a bit of a bold action is savvy for my soul as an Oilers fan. Fourth, and maybe most important, we have this line from his introductory press conference. Quote, this is Craig McTavish, grit without skill is not something that is going to move the dial on our team forward, end quote. Pardon my French, but thank fornicating Christ. Recent years with a collection of goons and hitters without hockey sense has left the Oilers without basically no one capable of taking an NHL shift at the bottom end of the roster. Craig McTavish didn't regularly make use of goons who couldn't contribute to the play on the ice. If this is the team-building philosophy McTavish brings to the team going forward, I'm 110% behind him. Don't get me wrong. There are obviously a number of ways this could turn out horribly, and certainly McTavish has a tough job ahead of him. A few shrewd deals and late summer bargaining bin signings could put this team back in the playoff conversation as soon as next year. I don't know that our salvation is here, but at least there's real cause for hope, and we haven't had that in the Oilers fan base for several years. P.S. McTavish was hired in June 2012. It seems more likely that he was involved in negotiating Justin Schultz's contract than actually recruiting him. Again, Jason in Calgary, our resident Oilers fan.
Yes, the Robertson's rants. And this was where if you want to go three in a row, if you got it still in you, that's where the correction was. We have many people email us in to correct you.
Yes, many of you emailed to let us know that BC Place in Vancouver, where the Canucks will play their outdoor game for next season, does have a retractable roof, although it's kind of like a moon roof, so to speak.
The whole roof isn't coming off?
No, it's just like a
little... Like the Cowboys Stadium?
Yes, it's a little part at the very top that kind of... The fans will be covered throughout. The field is kind of uncovered, and there's still like... I saw a video of it online. I might post it on our Facebook page. But basically, there's a circle in the roof, and there's a spot in the middle that retracts. It's very weird.
This sounds like the I believe this the same thing was being done in James Bond. I believe what movie was that where they had the volcano that wasn't really a volcano, and then it opened up to let Blofeld launch the missile out of there. I think that was You Only Live Twice. In fact, I'm sure it was.
Okay.
Because he had the Japanese helping him out, and then the ninjas came through the roof. Remember?
That's right. That's right. It was the lake, right? It was a lake.
From the air, you'd be like, hey, what the hell's going on here? There's just a lake there. But no, there's a layer. So.
Yeah, there's a piece in the center that pulls in the roof.
Pulls in.
Yeah, so there's still like a it's like a dot.
So it's a donut.
Kind of like a donut, yeah.
There's always a part in the middle that is covered.
Right, that's where the roof is kind of pulled in from. It's like sitting on your bed and pulling in.
It's like closing an umbrella.
It's kind of like that, but instead of the umbrella folding down, it's like being pulled in.
I feel like we're playing Pictionary. I'm just guessing.
So
baby fish mouth.
So yes, it does have a retractable roof, but it's not a traditional. It's still kind of weird, but I wasn't completely correct in what I said, so we need to make that correction. So will there be an outdoor game in Vancouver?
Yes.
Technically, yes, there will be, but it's still kind of a weird
thing. I've always thought there would be a great design for a stadium to make it truly open air, to where there was a roof, but then there was a gap between the roof and the top of the upper deck of maybe just even like 5-10 feet, just to allow the air to come in and out. And then it would be a completely open air, but it would be completely covered, so it's protected from the elements as far as wind, rain, snow. But it would be open air as far as the climate and the temperature. I always thought that would be a cool idea for an arena. I don't know that people would enjoy it too much, as it would be freezing right in there if you're going to see the Rolling Stones or something, you know. But it's
roll up the window.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought
the
it
giant
would be
handle.
the handle broke. Ah, screw it. Our next email comes from Tom from Parts Unknown, Ed. So we get to guess. I'm going to take a guess and say he is from Lesotho.
Is that an African nation?
That is. It's a landlocked African nation. That is where a lot of American textiles and clothing is now made.
Have you been watching PBS lately or something? Where did the knowledge come from?
Where did that knowledge come from?
Yes.
I was actually researching where a particular clothing brand, Levi Strauss, now makes their clothes in Lesotho, not here in America. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, think about that next time. You're supporting Lesotho's economy, Ed. And that's where Tom is. He works at Levi's. That's my guess.
Oh, okay.
He's the American liaison there in Lesotho.
Interesting.
Where do you think he is?
I would say he's from Independence, Missouri.
Independence, Missouri. All right. And have you been watching PBS? Is that how you know about Independence, Missouri?
Sure.
They do a lot of features on that area. Yeah. He says, hi, Eddie and Doug. I'm a Calgary fan, and since they traded away Aginla and Bouwmeester, the Flames have perversely started to win a lot more often. They've played with real desire and verve, and at the same time exposing their young guys to NHL hockey. However, a lot of the fans are completely mortified about this winning streak, seeing the likelihood of a top five pick slowly diminish. I do get that it would be in the interest of the club to get as high a pick as possible and possibly pick up a franchise player, but I can't find it in me to cheer a loss and curse a win, especially when it's the kids who are trying their socks off and gaining valuable experience in doing so. What are your thoughts on A, hoping a team deliberately loses when not in contention for a playoff spot, and B, do you think it occurs that a team deliberately tanks in order to get the best possible draft pick available, Oilers? And that's in his text, not mine. So
taking a shot at the rival.
Yep. So what do you think, Ed? What do you think about hoping your team deliberately loses when they're not in contention for a playoff spot? And B, do you think that ever happens?
That's a great question. Do I think teams intentionally tank games? Yes and no. I don't think they would ever tell their players to go out and not give it their all, but I do think that they will rest certain players or start certain players, maybe in net in particular. And, oh, well, if we lose, we lose. Especially like in a sport like basketball, where benching one or two guys could really make a huge impact on whether you win or lose or not.
Well, that's a sport that's also prone to point shaving, because That's one where, you know, what's the harm? You win by 8 instead of 10. Your team still wins, but we all get paid. So maybe you missed that free throw late in the game or something like that. But you're right on that. But I would say it's more an indication of if you're injured, maybe you should sit this one out. It's a lot more – we're going to be a lot more cautious with that. But where does that come from? Where do you think the ownership or the GM? Who do you think's making that call?
Either or. Depends on how hands-on the owner is. But we've seen what can happen in Pittsburgh when you get a couple of number one picks in a row. Now, it doesn't guarantee you something because we've seen it in Edmonton as well. But if you can hit the right guy and it's the right situation coming out in the draft, it can completely turn your franchise around. So you can understand it.
What do you think about as a fan?
I have to agree with them. I cannot cheer for my team or root for my team to lose. I can't do it. My brain may tell me that it's in the best interest of the team, but my heart can't bring me to doing
well,
that.
Well, see, I don't like last year when the Ducks made a run in the second half to even get into playoff contention. I wasn't upset that they were winning, but I was pissed off that they were winning. And the reason being,
wait a minute, huh?
Well, here's the thing. I wasn't like, damn, I'm so pissed off we beat the Flames. Damn. But I was like, where the hell was this in the first 2 months of the season? All of a sudden you guys are playing great, same stiffs. That just pissed me off to watch these guys loaf their way through 2 months of the season. And then suddenly they're playing great. It's like, where in the hell was that when we needed it, when it mattered? Now it doesn't matter. Now it's easy to go out there and play like, just I wanted to punch every one of them in the face. Except for Tamu, he's a good guy, and he always gives 100%. But certain guys, their initials are Ryan Getzlaff, I thought was just terrible last season.
Weird initials.
Yeah, and this season he's been great, but last season, man. Tell you a fan, though. One guy, I believe it's you, one guy that worked here was a big Dodgers fan, and he was going to a late season game. I can't remember who they were. I think the San Francisco Giants they were playing. He was convinced that they were going to lose that game. And it was a very late season game, and he was it mattered huge whether or not they were going to make the playoffs, the Dodgers. He put a sizable amount of money on the San Francisco Giants. He was convinced. And then he had tickets to go to the game. There was a walk-off home run for the Dodgers for them to win the game.
And he did not cheer.
I asked him about it the next day, and he said, I stood up, and I was the only one not clapping. I was just looking at it like, I can't believe I just lost.
There goes my money.
Exactly. He was like, I should have been so happy. But all I could think of was, I just lost all that money. And I'm like, well, that's your own day. You can never bet against, not a sizable amount, nothing that you're, I'll bet $20 against the Ducks, but if they lose, I'm still cheering because I'm happy to pay $20 if the Ducks win. If it was 500 or something, I'd be like, oh my God, what have I done? So I would never bet against my team, really, but I would certainly, and I would never root against them to lose. I'm against that. I don't think a franchise tries to lose, but they may not do their best to win. Let me put it that way.
Our final email or my final email?
Is this the one from Benny?
It is.
It is our final email.
Okay, our final email comes from Benny in Melbourne, Australia. He says, hey, Doug and Eddie. A few weeks ago, the Detroit Red Wings signed a defender, Danny DeKeyser. This was after the trade deadline. Being a relative newbie to NHL trading and signing, I would like to know why the signing was able to happen. Just wanted to also send a shout-out to my local ice hockey team, the Melbourne Mustangs, who started their season last night, Saturday night. Unfortunately, they got absolutely smashed 7-2 in the first game, but I have high hopes for the rest of the season. That was Benny in Melbourne, and shout-out to the Melbourne Mustangs. So I have no idea about Danny DeKeyser, not sure if I pronounced the name correctly, but why don't you answer that question, Doug?
All right. The reason being is that he was an undrafted free agent. And was unable to sign a contract with any team before his season ended, and he was declared himself a professional player. Once he did, though, because he's undrafted, he's just like signing anybody off the street. If sign you, Eddie, sign me, sign Benny. You're just a citizen at that point, and so any team can sign you, and you're immediately eligible to play. You don't have to go through the usual rigors, and you don't have to be on. The thing is, though, if you're not on the team by the trade deadline, you're not eligible for the postseason. So he will not be eligible to play for the Red Wings in the postseason. That's my understanding.
All right. And that's going to do it for this week's show, unless you have anything else final.
I do not. Do you not have a power play?
I did, but it can wait. This show's gone a little long, and it's getting. I got to go to work in about 3 hours, so let's go ahead and close up shop, as it were. Here, you want to obviously thank you for listening. If you want to get in contact with us, send us an email or be a fan correspondent. Our email address is feedback@puckpodcast.com. If you want to be a correspondent, it's correspondence, plural. Is that correct?
Yes. Correspondence@puckpodcast.com.
You can send Doug an email, doug@puckpodcast.com, me an email, eddie@puckpodcast.com. We'd love to get your feedback. We have the Puck Podcast Hockey Minute for you Monday through Friday, which, of course, will continue throughout the postseason. You can go to our official webpage, puckpodcast.com, to listen to the show and get some extra content on things as well. You can also, obviously, go to iTunes and download the show. We encourage your feedback there. We have a Facebook page that you can get on and be with us throughout the week to see posts and videos and stories and all kinds of things. It's facebook.com/puckpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, @puckpodcast. And sometimes we do Google Plus Hangouts, and sometimes my camera and or microphone will work, but not always, it seems. Again, that's going to do it. We've got the playoffs coming up. Again, the schedules are released, so go check them out. Find out when your favorite team is playing. And when we talk to you next week, we will have a recap of the first few games of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So we are obviously looking forward to that. For my partner, Doug Stolhand, I'm Eddie Garcia. And do you want to give that, if you have it, Doug, that email address one last time for the people
to get their... @gmail.com. For your playoff predictions, have to be in before game one. And I'm putting it up on Facebook right now, which will also go out on our Twitter feed. So puckpodcast.picks/@gmail.com.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. For my partner, Doug Stolhand, I'm Eddie Garcia, and we will talk to you next week with another edition of the Puck Podcast.
All opinions expressed on the Puck Podcast are those of the hosts and do not necessarily represent the views of FoxSports.com, 20th Century Fox, or any of its affiliates.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.